Okay, members, we'll bring the Public Safety and Security Policy and Finance Committee to order and start out with a roll call.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Becker-Flynn.
Here.
Representative Considine. Representative Dean. Representative Frankie.
Here.
Representative Grassel.
Here.
Representative Howe.
Present.
Representative Lomer. Representative Lucero. Representative Neuberger.
Ready to serve.
Representative O'Neill. Representative Pinto. Representative Ward.
Here.
Representative Zerloff.
Okay, members, if we could entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes from February 9th. Representative Frankie, you want to move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Frankie moves the minutes for February 9th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Today we have, yes, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we get started, I just wanted to ask a question about this committee's jurisdiction. I was just in civil law, and a bill that would restrict the power of the Minnesota Supreme Court passed and went straight to the General Register bypassing this committee. My question, Mr. Chair, is that within the jurisdiction of this committee, and shouldn't a restriction on the court's power come through this committee?
Well, Representative Hillstrom, truthfully haven't heard a thing about the bill or know anything about it, so I couldn't make an estimation until I read it and find out what's going on, but thank you for notifying me.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I hope you'll take a look at it, because I would like it if that bill would make an appearance in this committee.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. All right. Today we have the Department of Public Safety budget request. Commissioner Domino, will you be doing the... And Ms. Horn, right? Okay, you go ahead. Whoever wants to start with your name and title and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mona Doman, and I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. And seated to my right is Cassandra Hearn, our Deputy Commissioner, and we'll be giving our budget presentation today. So the Department of Public Safety is a diverse agency, as you know, with 10 divisions, and our whole mission is to keep Minnesotans safe. The majority of our work directly supports local agencies and communities. Our divisions investigate complex crimes and fires. We patrol the highways, issue driver's licenses, and help communities prepare for and respond to disasters. The governor's budget reflects that mission, so we can meet our obligations to Minnesotans when they need help and improve the way we provide services to meet their expectations. The demand for DPS services has increased, and it's a challenge to keep up. Drug evidence submissions at the BCA are up 47% in the last 5 years. Homicide investigations increased 63% from 2011 to 2015, and these investigations require significantly more time for technology evidence review as well. Because of the growth in the alcohol beverage industry, we've seen a 90% increase in the number of licenses issued in the last 5 years. Firearms examination has almost doubled in the past 5 years, and the turnaround time will reach an unacceptable 12 months by the end of this year. The governor has proposed public safety initiatives that would address these challenges and improve service. His proposals would increase the capacity to investigate complex homicide investigations, decrease turnaround time for drug chemistry and firearms evidence processing, help communities be better prepared for oil trains that move through Minnesota, replace the predatory offender registration system, provide ongoing maintenance for computer systems that local agencies and Minnesotans depend on, and ensure that the State Patrol will be able to provide helicopter rescues and support to local agencies, services not provided by anybody else in the state. But before we can accomplish these, we also need to address our operating budget. The governor's proposal to support ongoing DPS operations is critical just for us to maintain our current level of service to local agencies and communities. We are facing rising costs of payroll, peace officer retirement, rent, and IT services, just to name a few. If DPS has to cover these increases with staff reductions or other cost-saving measures, the result will mean longer wait times for services Minnesotans depend on, fewer inspections of licensed alcohol manufacturers and retail establishments, increased turnaround times for evidence processing for local agencies. For example, The turnaround time for felony-level drug offense testing is nearly 4 months. The turnaround time for trace amounts of suspected controlled substances is just over 6 months. Without this investment, DPS will be headed backwards. DPS won't be able to keep pace with the current demand for services. Any additional resources would have to be used up to maintain, would have to be used to maintain the status quo and not for improving services. DPS needs about $4 million a year so that there won't be a reduction to the services that the people depend upon. And so now I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Cassandra O'Hearn, but before I do that, you've seen this slide before, but I just wanted to remind you that the divisions at the Department of Public Safety that fall under the jurisdiction of this committee are Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, our Fire Marshal Division, our Office of Justice Programs, Emergency Communication Networks, Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And we also have our division directors in the audience, and as well as Assistant Commissioner Bob Hawkins to answer any questions that you might have as we proceed.
Hey, Commissioner, did you bring somebody along today when we get to that point that can talk in depth about the predatory offender registration?
Yes, yes, Mr. Chair. Our director of the our forensics lab is with us today.
Okay,
as is Superintendent Drew Evans.
Okay, thank you much. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I may, my name is Cassandra O'Hearn. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. We were pleased to be able to provide you with a budget overview a couple of weeks ago. So some of these slides you have already seen, and I'll move pretty quickly through them. But please feel free to stop me if you have any questions about them. The first slide here is just a reminder of the base budget for the Department of Public Safety. And this includes all of the divisions, both from the public safety side as well as transportation. A majority of the agency is funded through general funds, second then with trunk highway and special revenue accounts. We also then our expenses by category, and again this is department wide, with the majority of the expenses being in staff compensation or in general operating costs. We also provide transfers and local assistance. As the commissioner discussed, the governor has proposed an operational funding increase to support the department to ensure that the Department of Public Safety can maintain the current operation of services. That amount is $2.84 million in fiscal year 18 from the general fund, and that would translate then to $4.03 million in fiscal 19, and that would be ongoing from the general fund. The other figures are from the other funds as well. Without adequate funding, the department cannot meet the complex needs of Minnesotans and the community partners and ensure the efficient and effective and timely services that our communities and your constituents demand. The alcohol and gambling enforcement, just as a reminder, because you've seen these slides before, issue and approve alcohol licenses and permits, conduct those pre-license compliance inspections, investigate trade practices and other industry complaints. They verify compliance with the tribal state compacts with respect to the gambling facilities. They investigate and enforce lawful gambling fraud and illegal gambling, also focusing on charitable gambling issues. Some notable program activities from the past year, they conducted 147 proactive inspections of on- and off-sale liquor establishments out of over 31,000 liquor licensees. They processed over 27,000 retail identification cards, over 52,000 brand labels, conducted 149 gambling-related criminal investigations, which represents a 39% increase from 2015. And they engaged in unannounced compliance inspections of charitable gambling organizations in 51 establishments across seven different cities. Their funding resources, the base budget for the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division is $2.69 million, with a majority of that, $1.745 million, from the general fund. The governor's proposal adds critical resources for the gambling, Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, which is necessary to meet its statutory requirements. This proposal includes the addition of two full-time alcohol field agents, as well as a liquor license educator. That liquor license educator is currently funded through federal grants that will expire, and there are no other federal grants available to continue that necessary work. Position is critical for training local communities to enforce the underage drinking laws and preventing sales of obviously intoxicated persons. Homeland Security and Emergency Management provides a variety of services to local communities and partners around preparedness, response, recovery, and mitigation and prevention. Their program activities include providing over $19 million in assistance to communities that are recovering from natural disasters. It provided oil awareness training in all 87 counties for over 6,000 participants. They've helped communities across the state prepare for all types of disasters and emergencies. They provided on-site safety and security assessments and emergency plan reviews for the various types of schools throughout our communities, and completed federally required radiological emergency preparedness exercises. Homeland Security and Emergency Management's base budget is $58.89 million, which comes predominantly from federal funds, special revenue, and 3.14 in general funds. The governor's proposal includes a $20 million replenishment to the disaster assistant contingency account. This account is needed to provide for the needs of local communities and state agencies for future disasters. It ensures that resources are necessary quickly in a timely way to those affected communities without the need for a special session. The estimate is that by the end of this fiscal year, current fiscal year, there will be approximately $6 million remaining in that account. That is not enough to cover the natural disasters if we had another year like we did this past year. The governor's proposal includes additional resources for the Bomb Disposal Reimbursement Fund to cover the state's responsibility to pay for local governments, pay the local governments for the bomb squad services that they provide outside of their regular service area. So the HSEM contracts with the Minneapolis Police Department, the St. Paul Police Department, Bloomington Police Department, and the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office to provide bomb disposal services outside of their regular service areas when they're requested by local law enforcement. These four bomb squads are the only local teams in Minnesota that are trained for this service and accredited by the FBI. This proposal of $100,000 per year would cover the state's responsibility to these local governments for the bomb squad services that they provide outside of their regular service area to those communities when their services are necessary. Yes.
Why all of a sudden, why would we want to do pay for something they've been doing on their own? I mean, was it just out of feeling of who brought the idea? Did they ask for it, or why all of a sudden do they want money for a service they've already been doing?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the operational increases over time have increased, just like they have in everything else. So for liability insurance purposes and supplies and training and things like that, that the costs are going up. And what is happening is that these four communities are essentially subsidizing those other communities when their services are demanded.
Seems like a hard question, but I mean, when they were first organized, were they organized just to do this for themselves and then they started getting asks after that? Or when they organized, did they know they were going to go outside of their service community?
I do not have the history of how they were organized, but Director Joe Kelly, I think, can provide some an answer to your question.
Kelly.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Joe Kelly. I'm the Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. This model, Mr. Chair and members, for contracting with local police departments that have their own jurisdictional need for bomb squads has been around for a long time. I know the amount in the appropriation has been stagnant for more than a decade. The expenses that we contract for them or with them for include liability insurance and workers' compensation. So in case something happens, there's an accident, a death, or other damage when they're out there, their home jurisdiction doesn't maintain it, as well as their operational costs. So this arrangement's been around for a while. The amount of money that's been appropriated has not gone up, but the number of bomb runs that they go on to jurisdictions outside of their home base has gone up, as have their operating costs, and significantly has the cost of the workers' compensation and liability insurance. So this has been an arrangement that's been around for a long time, Mr. Chair, and they've simply outrun the amount that's been appropriated. They're the demand and their operating costs have outstripped the amount that's appropriated.
So, Mr. Kelly, our state appropriation has been ongoing for some years then in this?
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct. I think the base appropriation that we've had for, and again, I'll be conservative, for over a decade is $110,000 per year.
Okay, thank you for your explanation. Appreciate it. You can go ahead. Oh, Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of wondering, you have three of them within about 20 miles of each other, one in north central Minnesota. Wouldn't it make a little more sense to have some place else in greater Minnesota where it may cut down the response time?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair and Representative, there are only so many police departments and sheriff's office that have the interest and the capability to have that capability within their jurisdiction. Those four teams have divided up the state and have had sometimes there is a wait time for far flung parts of the state, but again it's hard to find a host community that has their own bomb squad and is willing to share with others. Additionally, there's a limit on the number of certified bomb technicians that the FBI will support in each state.
Okay, thank you much.
Ms. O'Hearn. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on to the governor proposes to remove the sunset date on the rail and pipeline safety account and reduce the yearly assessment by $1 million a year on the rail and pipeline companies moving products through Minnesota. This account has supported the training for almost 6,000 participants in 197 departments and agencies throughout Minnesota. The assessment would move from $2.5 million, which is where it currently is, to $1.5 million per year.
Oh, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what is the reason, and maybe I just missed it, what's the reason for the reduction of the assessment?
Do you want to take Mr. Kelly or Mr. Horn?
Thank you.
Director Kelly is still sitting here, so we'll allow him to speak if that's all right.
Mr. Chair and Representative, when the legislature established this assessment of the railways some years ago, they selected a number at $2.5 million. We have collected those assessments for 3 years. We have done all of the things that were required in that initial passage to include a study of what we needed to, how we needed to invest those assessment dollars going forward. And when we look at the demand that's out there for the things that a study conducted by the Management Analysis Division that was just completed at the end of 2016, we looked at those things and the things that, if you will, that are a backlog of community investments we can make to increase their preparedness if we have one of these incidents in a community, as well as what would be the ongoing costs of maintaining a community preparedness program. So when we put our pen and pencil to it and looked at the study and looked at our experience, it comes to about $1.5 million a year. So we envision investing the money that's currently in that account in the requirements that communities have to make sure they're prepared for that. And then going forward, we estimate it's about $1.5 million. So that's a correction, it's not a correction, an adjustment for the findings in the study and the strategy that we have going forward.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess it's probably just because I'm new to this rail and pipeline safety area, but I'm confused. So it seems like the assessment is dropping by $1 million. The state is going to put in an additional $1.5 million. If the assessment didn't drop by $1 million, then the state would be putting in an extra $500,000, not an extra $1.5 million. I'm confused about the connection between those things, or I'm still not understanding, I guess, why the assessment would have dropped, but perhaps they're two completely separate things. Can you just educate me on that?
Mr. Kelly, or anybody.
Representative Pinto, it is strictly an assessment. There are no longer general fund monies going into this account. So currently, the assessment is set to sunset in July. And so this would be removing that sunset, continuing the assessment, but at a lower level than the assessment has been for the past 3 years.
Representative,
just one final clarification, Mr. Chair. So that if I understand what you're saying, the assessment would drop to zero. So it's going from 2.5 to 1.5. In a way, the assessment's going from 2.5 to zero. The proposal is to continue it at 1.5.
Yes.
Do you understand?
Yes. Right. The assessment currently, if the sunset is not removed, will go to zero.
Right.
And so then the only monies that would be there would be any leftover money that's currently right now, right from assessments that are ongoing right now. So it would go to zero. Instead of going to zero, the assessment would continue, but at a lower rate than is today, so that the total amount collected would be $1.5 million instead of $2.5
million. Okay. I think I got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's all clear to me now. Have you talked to the user groups? Do they approve this, the one that the OSS? Has there been a conversation, or is there any opposition to doing this?
Mr. Chair, are you talking about
the
railroad?
Sunset on the assessment. And rather than having it sunset and just go away, we're going to continue it if we remove the sunset, right? So it's kind of like a school referendum that expires, but the school board says, no, we're going to keep it going, but the original intent was have it sunset. So that's what I'm asking. Is everybody in agreement with this? You haven't had any opposition?
Mr. Chair and members, this would be a reestablishment of the assessment on the railroads just at a lower cost. What we have heard from public or first responders around the state is that they value the training that we've provided for them, and certainly we know that they cannot always afford to attend training with the training budgets that they have, so there is support from around the state regarding that perspective. And as far as the rail, are you talking about the rail?
Yeah, I think there's a disconnect here, and it might be my fault. This would normally sunset, so there wouldn't be a fee at all. and that maybe some people would like that are paying the fee, but you're going to reinstate it at lower cost. It looks like a bargain, but they're still paying money when they wouldn't be if you didn't. So are they in agreement, the ones you're assessing? Yes, the ones that are receiving the assessment where it was going to go away, but now we're going to keep it going, if I understand it right.
Mr. Chair, the people that received the assessment?
No.
Or the railroads?
The railroads.
The one that paid out of their wallet?
It's split between the railroad and pipeline companies. I don't know the answer, Mr. Chair. I don't want to speak on behalf of those.
I was just wondering if they had called you and said, we don't like this, let it sunset, we're sick of paying. But they didn't. So, okay.
Mr. Chair, no, they have not. They have not made that phone call.
Now we got it. All right. Go ahead. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a railroad safety account. Is there some reason we can't use that money for the large number of at-grade crossings throughout greater Minnesota that need updates and...
Whoever
that we're trying to find money for,
Mr. Kelly, or
Mr. Chair and Representative, this money was assessed and is appropriated to the Department for community preparedness for response to make sure that our communities know that have adequate plans that know how they're going to react. The transportation and the grade. Separation in those things, sir, are the purview of the Department of Transportation. We don't, that is not spelled out as our responsibility within the statute.
The reason you've gone to these questions is because sunset is always a red flag. Because when people made the law, there was obviously a reason for the sunset, and it usually means reevaluation. And it doesn't sound like it's been reevaluated, but nobody's complained either. If you haven't heard anything from anybody, that's what I was wondering about. So that's why all the questions. Whenever we see a sunset, we're thinking, what was the reason for that? So, anybody else? Representative Considine?
Oh. That's a great idea, Mr. Chair. I think we should reevaluate and put some of that money towards grade separation and at-grade crossings in greater Minnesota.
Well, at least look at it. I think you're right. I mean, just see what's going on, see if the railroad or anybody that's paying the fee has been asked, but not saying we're going to jerk it away, but it would be nice to know if everybody knew about it.
Mr. Chair, if I may, it has been evaluated, and maybe Director Kelly can explain the evaluation.
Mr. Chair and members, in the law that enacted the assessment, we were required to complete two studies. One was due to the legislature in 2015, which was kind of the where are we now, where are we starting from when it comes to community preparedness for these types of incidents. And then we embarked upon our initial actions, the awareness training and other preparedness activities, and we were required to complete a second study that was delivered in January last month in 2017, which I refer to as the, you know, where are we now and where do we go from here? And the study indicated that there is a continuing need to provide resources to communities along the routes of travel for the pipelines and the railways to make sure that they are help them be more adequately prepared if they have a train derailment or a pipeline spill in their community. The railroads were part of that study, as were elected officials, first responders, emergency managers, and so forth. So this program has been studied twice by a third party, the Management Analysis Division, and they're the ones that came up with the recommendations of how that money should be invested in community preparedness, as well as what would be an ongoing program.
Right. Mr. Kelly, I think we agree that when the study said that there was a need, the thing that I was trying to get at is if the railroads were, if they thought there was a need, how much money, and if they wanted the sunset. Is there anybody in the railroad lobbyists that are here, or governmental relations, I guess would be a
Mr. Chair.
Term, that could address this?
I do see Mr. John Abbott's here.
Okay, Mr. Representative Frank had a question, too.
That was going to be my comment, that I see Mr. Abbott's come in late. so he may be better able to answer your question.
Yeah, because you could answer the question. If I just want to know whenever I see a sunset where the money has been coming from, if there's been a discussion.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer. We represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. And while there was a study conducted, two studies conducted on this, and the department found that they needed additional resources to continue training, we don't agree with that at this point in time. A couple of quick things. I think there's about $6 million in the account at this point in time. The study indicated that there was anywhere from $600 to $1 million worth of additional new training and other types of activities that need to go on. And from our point of view, that seems to be sufficient money to figure out a way to do those things right now, number one. Number two, when we initially entered into this agreement to provide resources to this account, the arrangement was 3 years when we agreed to help set up the account, do the training, participate, and we think now that the sunset's been reached, the sunset should be left in place. Also, just finally, Mr. Chairman, we are obligated under the same statute, the same statute to provide training of our own. Railroads are obligated to annually offer training along the oil corridors. We've done about 7,000 trainings, well, I think it's 7,100 trainings over the last 3 years. And so part of what's happening is we're starting to overlap. And some of the trainings that have been offered are not getting takers because we're kind of competing with one another as well. One in particular, I think it was in November, the railroads put on a major training over the north, over at the UPR, over at CPRs in Shoreham. We invited about 5,300 folks to come, no, 9,500 folks, 53 different organizations to participate, and there were 34 people who showed up. That's kind of unfortunate, I think. Anyway, I just want to speak to your question. I appreciate the opportunity, but we would just assume the sunset remained in place. There's plenty of money there to carry on. What needs to be done for a while, we could reassess whether or not we need to continue that assessment.
Before I give Mr. Representative Grossel a question here, this would have been nice to have this discussion before put the committee on the spot of making a decision. So we can't settle this today, but I would advise you folks to get together and discuss this, and we'll look at this through our budget process. We still have a few weeks before we put out a budget, but it'd be an interesting conversation to have, because I know Representative Neuberger is interested in pipeline safety. He talks often about it, but when this is the question sunset dates always bring. So, Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was just listening to the list of people and the organizations that were included in your survey or your evaluation. I didn't hear pipeline included, but I heard railroad and other people, but pipeline. What is their, how are they viewing this?
Anyone? Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative, this is for railroad and pipeline safety, and the pipeline companies were included in these studies as well.
And follow up, yeah,
please. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, and I didn't hear them mentioned when you were going through your list, and if their displeasure is the same as the railroads with this, then it would be nice to hear from them as well.
And Representative Neuberger, did you have?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted a clarification on how the account itself is set up. I have a clear picture of this. So what we're doing is that we have a $1.5 million assessment that is being put out there. So is this a use it or lose it type of assessment, or does it carry over into the following year?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it does carry forward. This money does not expire.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So theoretically speaking, so if, let's say, this year they're assessed $1.5 million. They use $1 million. In 2018, they use $1 million, and there's $500,000 left over. And so it rolls over into 2019. Does that reduce 2019's assessment by $500,000, or does the assessment stay the same? Does whatever rollover affect the next year's assessment?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neuberger, the assessment stays the same. It's based on a formula that's written into the statute, so it would be additive to whatever balance is in it remaining in that account.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Frankie had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Mr. Appitz, when you were mentioning all the trainings that you guys provided, when you offered those trainings and provided them to the certain agencies, did you also provide the cost along with the replacement of the officer on the street or the fire department people or the transportation per diem, anything to that effect, or did you just invite them?
Mr. Appitz.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We are not able to provide, we don't know, we don't provide costs to for transportation, et cetera, nor do we give continuing education credits. The state is able to do that, as I understand. Yeah, to provide continuing education credits and pay for a portion of the cost of their attending those trainings with the railroad's money. So we're kind of at a competitive disadvantage in providing the training, in a sense. Mr. Chairman, if I could just, to Representative Neuberger's question, it's $2.5 million a year that is assessed against the railroads and the pipelines. The railroads pay $1.25 a year, and that is assessed against the Class 1s based on the amount of mileage that they have in the state. So the BN pays about half, and the CP pays about a quarter, and the other two pay about an eighth apiece.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a brief statement that I know Mr. Appitz through my community, and we have one of the two refineries in the state and also a lot of railways that run through there. So training and safety is something that's always been near and dear to me and the people of my area, so that's how I've come to know Mr. Appitz. So this is a subject that I hope that continues to work and that something can be worked out. That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Kelly, it looked like you wanted to say something.
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, members, I just want to make a clarification. When we talk about training, we are often talking about different things. The training and the railway have been good, and the pipeline companies have been good partners in providing that training to the local jurisdictions. What they tend to train on is this is how we as a carrier, these are the measures that we're taking to provide for safe transportation of the product. This is how we will respond to deal with the derailment, the fire, or the spill. Our training focuses on what actions is the community going to take? What actions are the communities going to take to alert and warn their people that something has happened and to protect the community? So the rail and pipeline training focuses on the transportation of the product. Our training focuses on the protection of the communities. So they're complementary, but they are different.
Okay, I got another question here. We'll let Representative Hilstrom ask a question, then maybe move on and have some deeper look into this to make sure all the user groups that pay the fee are notified and we get a discussion going and before we make a decision. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I missed it, but how much more training do you think is needed? And is every area of the state that needs to be covered gotten one set of training, or are there places, gaps, that have not yet received any training?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilstrom, we have completed to a degree what we refer to as awareness training and then a certain level for fire departments of operational training, how they will work with the railways as they come to deal with the incident on the railway or the pipeline while those fire departments protect the community. What we have done very little of to this point are those other community protective measures to work on evacuation planning and drills, shelters, alerts and warnings, making sure the public is aware of the risk and how they should react or respond. So we have, to a large measure, completed the first round of awareness training, but we view that as just the first round of a succession of trainings that are necessary to make sure our communities are prepared.
Mr.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so how long do you anticipate that this funding would continue? Is it another couple of years, or do you anticipate not sunsetting this resource?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, that's a difficult question to ask. I think that the requirement for our communities to be prepared for this type of an incident and the retraining and continuing exercises that are necessary will probably continue as long as we are transporting these types of substances through pipelines or on the railways. I don't believe it's a thing that we do it and say we're done and then can assume that all of our communities are and will stay prepared for that kind of event. It's the same approach that we take for all other hazards, in that preparedness is an ongoing iterative process that as long as threats and hazards exist in our environment, to our communities, we have to continue to prepare.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Members, just about to the end, any closing, or if you had another slide? Oh, Representative Neuberger, sorry.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one more quick question. As this account moves forward, will the intention of the account also include supplies and other equipment, specifically speaking to the point of foam? I know that foam is a frontline product that you use, especially for petroleum-based fires, and I know it's also it is a financial hardship for many communities. So will this fund, as it's restructured, will it also include supplies and equipment?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Neuberger, I will declare up front, I am not a firefighter. The study one of the findings of the study is that it did not identify a significant need for equipment and or supplies at the local level, mostly because local fire departments are going to be focused on protecting adjacent structures and not dealing with the product fire on the rail or from the pipeline. The type of equipment that we think it would be most appropriate to invest some of these funds in are the monitoring and sensors that are needed by our hazardous materials teams, our chemical assessment teams, emergency response teams, because those are the specialists that are going to arrive at the scene in your community and advise your fire chief as to how to contain the situation. But the study did not indicate that there was a significant or really any need. There was no call, if you will, for the firefighting equipment, foam and trucks and that sort of thing for local fire departments.
Okay. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to go back to your remark about redefining it. Everything we're talking about is after we've had a disaster. Would it make sense to take some of this money and try to mitigate some of those safety concerns all over the state? We have a lot of places that have come forward that say they need their railroad crossings updated and fixed. And everything we're talking about is after-the-fact disaster. I don't see cutting the assessment. I see taking it and using it to mitigate some of those safety concerns up front.
Thank you. And Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to piggyback on that a little bit. And ask a question, are we then encouraging them to do a study and give us more information about this proposal so that we are in a better position to make a judgment on this aspect of the whole proposal? And if so, then we should ask you to incorporate a conversation with the Department of Transportation so that we get some kind of an understanding of how that works.
I think, yes, we will make a decision before we do the budget, because studies usually take forever. but we will have to have that conversation. And Commissioner Dolman.
Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Ward, we're happy to provide a copy of that study to the committee so that at least you can look at that and see what it says, and then that might help you best to make a decision as follow-up.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Anything else on this division? before we get to the BCA?
Nope, BCA is next.
Okay, thank you, Ms. O'Hearn.
The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, you know, from our overviews, you're pretty familiar with the work that the BCA does, right? Broken down into investigative services, forensic science services, the Minnesota Justice Information Services, otherwise known as MINJIS, and they also have training and auditing functions as well. Past year, they've worked over 2,000 in cases, cyber tips, and case tips, many of which were large-scale investigations involving serious crimes. The labs received over 17,000 case assignments. Of course, in every particular case, there would be many and multiple evidence submitted to the lab for assessment in those cases. The operations center handled over 9,000 duty officer calls, and MINJIS maintains a combined 55 different criminal justice data systems for internal and external customers. They processed almost 500,000 criminal history background checks in 2016. Their resources, their base budget is a little over $80 million. Most of that is general fund at $60.76 million. They do receive over $11 million in special revenue. There is over $2 million in trunk highway, which is devoted to the work specific to DWI enforcement. The governor recognizes the important services provided by the BCA and makes the necessary investments to improve the BCA's services and proposes six change items. And those six are on the slide there. I will discuss each one separately. We'll start with the predatory offender registration system replacement. The governor's proposal includes funding to redesign and develop a new predatory offender registration system to replace the current system, which I believe is about 16 years old. The request includes ongoing funding and maintenance for that system and staffing support beginning in fiscal 2020. Mr. Chair.
I wonder if Mr. Evans is here. Remember this when I wanted to combine the level three offenders or something that the Department of Corrections was doing and give it all to the DCA under this umbrella? Wouldn't this be a great time to do it? Yeah, you could just explain a bit better than I can in your words what I was up to before. I wanted to take the corrections registration because we're having two different ones, and you guys looked like you were pretty good at and just have one database. If you could inform the committee what I'm talking about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's two different non-compliant websites or two different websites, I should say. They don't have to necessarily do with compliance. There's a public-facing non-compliant website that has certain offenders who are non-compliant beyond a certain time period. The level three predatory offenders that are designated by the Department of Corrections as level three predatory offenders, there is a certain informational process to communities across Minnesota, including their information being posted on a Department of Corrections website. That was the proposal, as I recall at the time, would be to combine those notification sites into one. The Department of Corrections does have a number of pieces to that notification process and are intimately involved in it. From there, we haven't had any conversations about that particular proposal related to this.
The political side of it, or I don't know if I call it that, the mechanics side of it, was this, last time BCA was willing, but the corrections seemed to be not willing to give it up. And I don't know why that was, but maybe we can look at that and re-engage that conversation again in the future here. So, okay, thank you, Ms. Director. Any questions? Okay, go ahead, Ms. Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The governor's proposal on this change item is $2.1 million in fiscal 18, $2 million in fiscal 19, and $400,000 in ongoing maintenance and support. The governor's proposal includes ongoing funding for additional agents and analysts in the BCA's investigation unit to address the rising request for assistance in homicide investigations and to address increases with respect to narcotics investigations, which include the opioid and heroin issues that are facing our state today. This proposal includes four additional narcotics investigators, one criminal intelligence analyst, three BCA agents to work on homicide investigations, and one legal analyst. The governor recognizes the need to invest in firearms examiners to alleviate the significant backlog of cases and unreasonable turnaround times. This change item supports the additional funding for two additional firearms examiners in the BCA. That amount is $250,000 per year. It would increase current staffing from five examiners to seven. As has been in the news most recently, including today, Minnesota has seen a significant increase in opioid overdoses, whether via prescription medication or illegal drugs. This is not unique to Minnesota. It's happening across our nation. The governor proposes to add an analyst to the BCA to begin to work on monitoring this increasing drug threat. This would enable the BCA to work more closely with the Minnesota Department of Health and other state and local agencies to fully understand the drug threat to Minnesota and allow more timely deployment of resources to better protect the health of the people in our state. The amount of this change request is $100,000 per year. The governor's proposal includes two additional staff to support the new criminal history system. The department requested this support in 2013 when the funds were provided and appropriated to build the system, but the ongoing support was not given at that time. The criminal history system is a critical backbone system for providing criminal justice partners with up-to-date and accurate information. This change item of $250,000 would support two positions to support that criminal history system. The new system will be available in early 2018. The governor's proposal includes an additional scientist in the drug chemistry laboratory and also additional funds for supplies in this lab. This will reduce the current backlog and turnaround time. The change to the base budget is $150,000 per year. Current processing time in the chemistry lab is 75 to 80 days, which is more than double the turnaround time deemed acceptable by prosecutors and judges. Mr. Chair, that completes the BCA.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions from members on the BCA section? Letting them off easy. Violent Crime Coordinating Council next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Violent Crimes Coordinating Council, the VCCC, was created by the legislature in 2010. It is comprised of sheriffs, police chiefs, prosecutors, state law enforcement officials, community representatives. The primary duty is to develop an overall strategy to ameliorate the harm caused to the public by gang and drug crime within the state of Minnesota. It provides direction and oversight to the multi-jurisdictional violent crime enforcement teams, otherwise known as VSETs and commonly referred to as drug task forces. These are located throughout the state. In 2017, there were 21 of these drug task forces, which cover 70 counties. But they do not that's cool. Give an idea of their program activities, conducted over 7,000 investigations, executed over 2,000 search warrants, and made over 4,000 arrests. They are responsible for removing children from homes where drug arrests occurred and protecting those children. They've seized over 1,000 firearms, and they've seized, you can see on the slide, a lot of drugs. As I said, there are currently resources are $4.1 million, which include $3.5 million from the general fund. They do receive a little over $500,000 of federal grant monies. Currently, there are the 21 task forces over 70 counties. The governor proposal is to increase the general fund appropriation by $1 million per year, which would expand funding to the task forces, would expand hopefully to cover more counties, and also expand the capacity of those task forces that are currently in existence. And with that, Mr. Chair, do you have any questions?
Would this be a good time to bring down the police chief and the Commander Brian Mueller from Washington County and Plymouth Police Chief to talk about? I see they're on the list here.
Yeah.
Chief and Commander, whichever one would like to start with your name and title.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Goldstein, and I'm the police chief with the City of Plymouth and the recent past chair of the Violent Crime Coordinating Council. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on behalf of the Violent Crime Coordinating Council, I'm here today to seek your support for the additional $1 million in funding to the Violent Crime Coordinating Council to help support the extensive and important work being done to combat the illicit drug trade and to investigate other violent criminal activity. While the Violent Crime Coordinating Council has been grateful for the previous funding, there have been no increases in state funding for the last 5 years running, which is problematic. With the increased funding, some departments would be able to add more members to the existing task forces, and new task forces could also be established where certain voids exist. Only 70 of our 87 counties are participating in a task force opportunity. Further, the increased funding would help counter the higher operational costs that other member agencies have incurred over the last several years, including rising liability insurance premiums, increased personnel and fringe benefit costs, the procurement of emerging technologies that help support investigative activities, along with the higher costs for confidential funds or buy operations due to the changes in the Minnesota sentencing guidelines, whereby task forces have to purchase larger amounts of narcotics to meet the new charging thresholds, all of which are very costly. Very simply, the drug trade is not going away. In fact, it is growing at an alarming rate. Meth sales and investigations are off the charts. We have never experienced anything like it before, and we are all aware of the devastating effects that the heroin trade has had and will continue to have on our many communities throughout the state. This increase would make a significant difference, and any support this committee could offer in that regard would be greatly appreciated. So I thank you for your time and consideration on this important matter, and if you have any questions, we'd be happy to try to answer them for you.
Okay, Commander, do you want to make a comment? And then we have, we've got Representative Neuberger first. Huh? You want to wait? Okay, Commander, any comments?
Mr. Chair, committee, thank you. My name is Brian Mueller. I'm the commander of the Washington County Sheriff's Office and currently sit as the vice chair for the Violent Crime Coordinating Council. Definitely stand with Chief Goldstein here and ask you for your support for this increased funding.
Okay. Questions? Representative Neuberger. All right. You must have done a good job, so thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gospel had a question.
No question. Oh. Just having worked on a narcotics task force, multi-jurisdictional, for the smaller counties, it's important to have that force multiplier that can come in and help you with these types of investigations. Not having personnel readily available to just to take care of these narcotics investigations, it was always nice to be able to have, because we were attached to a federal task force as well, so that we could work a three-reservation area and at least six counties in our area where we were able to go around and assist in those things, leaving the deputies who were patrolling in their places so that they didn't have to be pulled off the road to take care of these things. We went in and took care of them for them.
And I just, while you were testifying, I texted a sheriff friend of mine and asked if you guys did a good job, and he said, yes, you do. So you got a, you got a good reference on the spot. So
good to know.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have anything else?
Commissioner Doman, did you want to wrap up with any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd just like to say thank you for your time today, and we appreciate any support that you can give to the governor's proposals in his budget. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And members, we're going to be putting our budget together here naturally and as we go, and I'm already starting to kind of juggle a few figures around, and each one of us are going to have our own probably special areas we'd like to see taken care of. So if you've got input, start getting in. You can see today we're debating over $100,000, and so we might get down to how many paper towels they're using. The funds are getting hard to find here. So, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, do we have a timeline yet for when you'll get a target and when that target will be public and when your bill is due out?
Nothing on all three. But as soon as we do, I'm going to let you know. I would like one as soon as possible, naturally, so we can start planning. So.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, members. Meeting adjourned.